Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The Cotton Board, it's a national organization. It was created by federal statute in 1966.
Bill Gilland is president and CEO of the Cotton Board, explaining their role.
That statute created the Cotton Research and Promotion Program, created the Cotton Board to oversee that program. We collect assessment funds today from U.S. cotton producers, as well as the cotton content of imported apparel and other cotton products. We collect those funds, and then we enter into a contract with Cotton Incorporated, which uses those funds to carry out the Cotton Research and Promotion Program. The advertisements many of your listeners see, ag research projects that help them in their farms on the ground, and other things.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We're holding this critical hearing, very important, to discuss cattle markets, concentration in the meatpacking industry, and allegations that the Big Four meatpackers have partaken in unfair practices that have driven down prices for cattle producers and left distorted markets.
Chairman of the House Ag Committee from Georgia, David Scott. Now, the ranking member of that committee from Pennsylvania is G.T. Thompson.
Now, the Senate agriculture hearing yesterday served as yet another reminder of the lack of agreement on proposed cattle market mandates. It also brought to light serious questions about the purpose, intended scope, and the need for a special investigator legislation.
As Congress looks for answers, Don Schiefelbein, a Minnesota cattle producer, says,
Congressman Johnson knows full well there's a group of agricultural entities that got together in Arizona, and we laid out a pretty clear plan on items that we thought would move the industry forward. They included things that I'm pleased that you acted upon, and that is the contract library, which was crucial. The other thing we agreed on is the fundamental support we need is more packing capacity. And I know the butcher block bill is going through Congress, but those are very, very important to the well-being of our industry. The other item that we discussed, I think it's very important given the concentration that's been discussed, and that is that we have proper and effective oversight of the packers. Those are the three big areas I think that we agreed on, and to me, fundamentally, that is the role of government in solving those three issues.
He reminds legislators of what the role of government is.
The other thing that's awfully crucial, and again, it's the role of government as I see it. When people are in desperate need, that's when government comes in and provides them a safety net.
Right.
What you've done with the drought assistance is superb, and the immediacy that you provided that here just in the last week, I can't tell you how many phone calls I received saying, thank you very much. You're probably clearly aware that there's a portion of our country that is still suffering the drought, but there's also a portion just north of you, Congressman Johnson, that is dealing with a horrible blizzard. If you have not seen the photos of what these producers are experiencing, you need to get hold of them and see. And to me, providing that safety net is really a critical function of government when Mother Nature or things of your underneath your own control cannot be managed.
And also says it's important to remember the role innovation plays.
I think it's important for the whole committee to hear this. Innovation is the engine that drives agriculture. Drive across this country, drive across, go to any other foreign country, and you'll see the manner in which we adopt innovation and make things better is really what drives our competitiveness. My father, who Congresswoman Fischbach mentioned, Big Frank, he gets asked a lot of questions. He says, how does your family succeed in a family of that many members, yet how can you be successful? His quote that he is quoted on saying, and I think it's a lesson everybody could learn, my dad's quote is, the reason our family is successful is because we don't raise cattle the way I used to. And I want you to absorb that just for a moment. That is critical, and it plays exactly into AMAs and new ways of doing business and new ways of marketing. We've got to evolve, and you've got to allow innovation to enter your business.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We projected corn and soybean returns by date using the planting decision model for a central Illinois situation.
That's University of Illinois ag economist Dr. Gary Schnittke.
What we found is that throughout the planting season from April through June 10th, we are projecting corn to be more profitable than soybeans. Corn is projected to be more profitable than soybeans by large margins, particularly in April and May. At the end of April, corn is projected to be more profitable by $225 per acre, and that goes down to $108 per acre by June 10th. That is different than most years. In most years, soybeans become more profitable than corn. Some of the items that we used in making those projections are yield declines as specified in an April 14, 2022 FarmDoc Daily article. This article was written by Scott Irwin and summarizes Emerson Nefsinger's work on yield declines as we go through the growing season. We used a maximum yield of 235 bushels for corn and 75 bushels for soybeans and then reduced that as we went through the growing season. We used prices of $7 for corn, $14.80 for soybeans. Those were the bid prices for fall delivery during mid-April of 2022. We used fertilizer prices that came from the April Illinois Production Cost Report, the first one of the month, and that was $621 per ton for 33%, $987 for DAP, and $865 for potash. Our pesticide and other costs for corn and soybeans were as specified in a FarmDoc Daily article, our late March relief of our 2022 budgets. Some items to note this year. Corn is projected to be more profitable than soybeans throughout the planting season. Again, this is unusual. Usually soybeans become more profitable than corn. Yields and profits don't show a decline in expected returns until May has arrived. So we still have time, or until we reach that point, we have time to plant corn and soybeans in close to optimal conditions for 2022. Corn, as we've mentioned, is projected to be more profitable than soybeans. We have been projecting that since we first released budgets in July of 2021 for 2022 year, yet we're getting less corn. In Illinois, we're seeing a 300,000-acre shift away from corn to soybeans. We suspect that even though corn is projected to be more profitable than soybeans, a lot of the reason for that is input uncertainty. Primarily, well, there's a lot of input uncertainty, but the one for the switch is probably primarily related to nitrogen fertilizers. So some farmers may still be considering a switch from corn to soybeans. If they do so, we would suggest pricing some of that corn because there is a lot of price uncertainty in the near future. And also, our budgets that we used for our projections here were based on corn after soybean budgets. Corn after corn may add a little bit to cost. We believe that input and price uncertainty related primarily to nitrogen fertilizer played a role in the 2022 decisions. We suspect that that price and input uncertainty will continue into 2023. So, as we begin our planting season for 2023, likely in the summer of 2022, that item needs to be considered.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I'm concerned that in the last 40 years, this country has lost its grip on the free market component of capitalism.
That's the sentiment of the chairman of the House Ag Committee from Georgia, David Scott.
Fair and competitive markets should engender opportunities for many and not just benefit for the few at the top. We created antitrust laws for a reason, and unfortunately, we have gotten away from enforcing these anti-competitive practices. And we have moved toward a system that prioritizes efficiency at all costs. I was very glad to see President Biden's administration reprioritize enforcement of competition laws through their executive order on promoting competition in our American economy. And I hope that this is a sign of more action to come. As we move through this hearing and examine this issue, I think we should keep in mind the idea of how competition in markets increase equity and fairness. Another issue with consolidated industry is that it can create less resiliency on our supply chains. We saw this directly during the Holcomb fire in 2019, and then the COVID-19 pandemic, when a small number of companies control an entire link in the supply chain, it makes it more susceptible to shocks and less resilient when black swan events occur. And in that vein, consolidation doesn't just hurt our ranchers. It also hurts our consumers who face supply bottlenecks, higher prices, and limited choices.
At a hearing on Wednesday examining price discrepancies, transparency, and alleged unfair practices in the cattle market,
today's witnesses bring together many years of experience in the cattle industry and also different perspectives. And I thank all of our witnesses for being here. Unfortunately, we were supposed to have a fourth witness, a rancher, on our panel, but due to intimidation and threats to this person's livelihood, to this person's reputation, they chose not to participate out of fear. Witness intimidation is unacceptable, and it is not conduct befitting this treasured institution, the Congress of the United States. And I never want to hear about a witness choosing not to come before our committee because of fear again.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Would you rather have one bid from the packer with what you know is $200 a head cost? Or would you rather have three bids from packers with $500 a head cost?
Colorado's state cattle economist, Dr. Stephen Koontz, at a recent Senate Ag Committee hearing on cattle markets.
And that's usually where the group of producers, whoever's invited me to the meeting, starts wondering why they invited me to the meeting. They're looking for answers, but we're really based with that as a dilemma. You have concentration in this industry because it is tremendously efficient. So my analogy is actually a summary of a large body of literature in the area of agricultural economics. Economies of size and the resulting efficiency are orders of magnitude larger than what are found and what are measured in terms of price impacts. That's a conclusion that comes out of the literature that I read, that I work in. It's not a conclusion that there's anti-competitive conduct, and in fact, it's rather competitive within this industry. It's also important to recognize that the dollars that come into the industry come directly from the consumer. Everybody works with what starts as consumer dollars. And then the dollars are split as they're passed down that market channel. They have to go through the food service, retail, purveyors and packers, feedlots, backgrounders, stocker operators, and cow-calf producers last. That is simply the way the market channel works. If you lower costs up into the market channel, then what happens is you wind up with higher prices down at the farm level, and you wind up with lower prices or lower costs for the consumer. That is a substantial body of the research that I understand on this industry. AMAs are very much in that same framework. They're the real innovation that the industry has gone through the last 10, 15 years. The folks that I know that developed those and pursued them, brought them to fruition to where they were working, were going through very aggressive cost-cutting exercises, trying to do the right thing in terms of managing cattle, getting the most dollar out of that process, and they were very successful at it. Formulas are worth about $25 a head for the feeding enterprises that use them, and more or less so about $25 a head for the packers that use them. And the bottom line is that's $50. And if you transfer animals from the formula bucket to the negotiated cash trade, you lose whatever proportion of animals those are, you lose that $50 value. And that is going to be passed down primarily to the cow-calf producer. I've repeatedly heard that AMAs remove the packer from the market, and what I can guarantee you is if the packer doesn't have to buy them, the feedlot doesn't have to sell them. It's a one-for-one deal. It's absolutely one-for-one. That doesn't mean with what's left, we have enough negotiated cash trade that we're comfortable with the price, but the industry has worked on that, and with expanding volumes that we've had in the last 10, 15 years, we have much more robust price discovery. Price discovery happens in very thick markets, very thin markets. It's not driven by the volume of cash trade. I've done some research on that. It's not published. It's ongoing, but I'm very comfortable saying that, I believe that result. Likewise, there's not any research that shows that mandating cash trade is going to make for better cattle prices. That's just not part of the research that I understand.
Dr. Stephen Koontz, Colorado State Livestock Economist. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We were created back in 1966, so we've been doing this research and promotion activities for cotton for over 50 years. But when we conduct one of these evaluations today, we're looking for signs that we're doing our job, that we're succeeding in our mission.
President and CEO of the Cotton Board, Bill Gillen, on results of a third-party evaluation of the research and promotion program.
They found strong positive returns to cotton producers and importers because of this program. But if I could, I want to stress that your listeners can trust this analysis. In the first place, it's mandated that we do it every 5 years. In the second place, we used some very well-known cotton economists, those that are primarily from Texas A&M and Texas Tech, to do this work. The report is peer-reviewed and even reviewed and approved by the Department of Agriculture. And those analysts use an econometric simulation of U.S. and foreign fiber markets. And it's just that simulation has been here for years and years, and they're constantly refining it. And they use that model to determine if the activities that we carry out under our program are, in fact, enhancing demand and profitability for cotton growers. And I'll just get right on into the results that they did, in fact, as I said, conclude that we are enhancing profitability and we're enhancing demand for cotton. The overview, all of it's good news. They concluded that the cotton checkoff program enhances cotton and cottonseed demand. It's helped increase U.S. cotton yields and production. It's helped increase cottonseed prices. It's basically generated a positive return to both cotton producers and importers. This program also helps reduce producers' dependence on government farm programs, and by doing that, we help benefit taxpayers. Just stretching it out a little bit, we do invest a lot of money in agricultural research every year, and that research has been demonstrated to help reduce cost per acre to plant and produce upland cotton. It helps reduce the inputs that farmers have to use, as well as increase the efficiency associated with those inputs. So we feel very good about the overall general results of the analysis.
We talk about positive returns.
The return on investment for producers, the analysis indicates that producers get almost $6.50 for every dollar they invest in this program. So that's over a 6-to-1 return for producer investment. And the return on investment for importers is greater than that, and that's mainly because they're dealing in a downstream product that's of higher value, on a pound basis than is cotton. We've seen increased cotton yields. The U.S. reduced U.S. production costs by about $7.60 an acre. We've increased retail cotton fiber demand by over 14%. That's about 2.75 million bales a year. Farm prices were shown to be about 13% higher on average in the U.S. farm prices of cotton because of the program, and that's generated about $11.2 billion in farm-level returns over the life of the program. And I guess the last thing I'll just point out quickly is that the program was also shown to help increase cottonseed demand and cottonseed prices over the longer term. Prices, it's pushed prices up by about over $12 per short ton, and it's helped increase cottonseed disappearance by about 266,000 short tons per year. That's in a period from 1993 to 2019. So, I mean, that's just a few of the numbers, and we're very happy with it.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
As I've said on numerous occasions, you know, we need to focus on preparing for the next farm bill. And while I acknowledge there has been modest progress starting in February on that front, and I'm very appreciative for that, we are inexplicably veering off course today.
That's the ranking member of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson.
You know, issues surrounding cattle markets are really important, and I agree with you on that, Chairman. And I think that importance is exemplified by the time that this committee has already spent exploring and debating them. We've had a productive closed-door roundtable in the matter and an insightful subcommittee hearing where we heard from a slate of esteemed economists, not to mention a five-hour full committee hearing where Senator Grassley was given a platform to promote his legislative proposal. Secretary Vilsack weighed in with his views, and we heard from a diverse array of livestock stakeholders and a packer representative. That work culminated in the bipartisan and ultimately bicameral passage of legislation to ensure the continued availability of crucial livestock mandatory reporting data and the establishment of a cattle contract library to provide an additional layer of market transparency. As cattle markets continue on a steady trajectory and we await USDA's implementation of the contract library pilot, I have to wonder why today's hearings was so urgent. So urgent that I wasn't even consulted in scheduling it. Rather, I was told it was happening as letters were sent to the Packers, were drafted to send to Packers CEOs, and the threat of subpoenas began to fly. And that's just not the way this committee should conduct its business. I do appreciate the chairman and his opening remarks, noting his open-mindedness, and I trust and enjoy a great relationship with the chairman. And So I appreciate hearing that in your comments, that being open-minded as this hearing, as you gaveled, is him. Now, I've said it before, and I think it bears repeating, if there has been collusion, manipulation, or other wrongdoing by packers, then the law should be enforced under the existing authorities at USDA and DOJ. Absent such findings, it's time to stop demonizing the packing industry out of political convenience. And like the rest of us, the packers are dealing with not causing the record levels of inflation that are plaguing our economy with skyrocketing input costs across the board, not to mention severe labor shortages and continued transportation and supply chain challenges. And despite these enormous obstacles, the packers continue to provide an invaluable service and do so with incredible efficiency. We know we need greater competition. We know that, and I think we're committed to doing the right things to help small processors become medium, medium become large, and have greater competition. Yet at every turn, this administration has obsessively pointed the finger at the packing industry, blaming them almost single-handedly for rising food costs. They've done so via blog posts, contrived public events, and press briefings, all without any acknowledgement of the culpability of their own reckless spending and heavy-handed regulatory agenda. And I fear that today's hearing is nothing more than perpetuating the Biden administration's attempt to continue that desperate, baseless narrative. Now, if we're generally trying to better understand beef pricing dynamics, you'd think we might benefit from having the heads of packing companies' beef units testify today. I know several of the companies suggested that alternative, and their suggestions were repeatedly denied. Perhaps a trusted economist or a seasoned market analyst would be the key to that conversation. But despite a bipartisan request from several of our members, I understand that idea was rejected. Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping I'm wrong, but this hearing reeks of kind of political point scoring on behalf of the administration and an effort to justify drastic, unvetted, or controversial legislative action. The hearing title alone suggests the decks were stacked long ago in favor of a predetermined outcome.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A farm bill is about more than farms. Several titles within a farm bill, like the one being crafted now for hopeful adoption next year, are not just about farm safety programs. The largest amount of funding within the past several farm bills have come within the nutrition title, which covers the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and other domestic food assistance offerings. As National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue explains,
what we've seen over the course of several farm bills now is if you don't have a strong nutrition title, it is next to impossible to get a farm bill through.
The energy title promotes renewable energy development, and as bill chair of the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association explains, keeps the power on in rural America.
Rural utility service loans are critical for affordable, reliable power to rural America.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.